You're listening to Visionaries by Wonder, a podcast where CEOs, founders, and leaders share their success stories. With their host, Jeannie O, the founder of Wonder and an award-winning product strategy and UX design firm, we'll be exploring the world and connecting with inspiring individuals. Join us.
Hi, Wonder family. Today is a very special day because we are launching season 2 of our podcast, where we dive deep into the lives of product leaders who are making a difference in the world. And we're also rebranding our name to Visionaries to reflect the common trait amongst our guests on the show. And I'm really excited to introduce our first guest of the season, Isabel Last, a visionary and innovative language teacher turned CEO, who is revolutionizing the way we learn language through her immersive story-based video game, Vienna. And if you've ever tried learning a new language, you know the process could be tedious and frustrating. So she built a team, built a video game that uses voice recognition technology to teach Spanish in real time. Players participate in real-world scenarios and work towards an end goal, all while learning the language at their own pace. Isabel believes that Vienna could be a true paradigm shift in language learning and hopes to see the game used in an academic setting to fill gaps in education. So thank you guys for joining as we explore Isabel's journey to creating Vienna and her vision for the future of language learning. So Isabel, welcome to the show.
Hi, so happy to be here.
Happy year.
You knocked that out of the park. That was really well.
Good. I love that. I read through some of your bio and also articles written about you. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Oh, yeah. All the articles. This was like two.
So you were a Spanish teacher, which is awesome. Walk us through that journey of like how you became a CEO from teaching Spanish.
Yeah, so my background's in Spanish teaching and also Hispanic linguistics a little bit. I'm certified to teach Spanish. That was what my undergraduate degree was in. That was in Towson University in Baltimore. That's where I was born and raised, on the East Coast. And I became a Spanish teacher basically because I was obsessed with Spanish and I wanted to use it in some form because I just wanted to be around it and keep going with it. And my dad convinced me that the only kind of pragmatic degree that I could get that was Spanish adjacent would be to become a Spanish teacher, and he was a Spanish teacher. And so I went with that, and I got certified, and through that certification process, I taught middle school and high school Spanish. And I was taught this very specific method called task-based learning. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't heard that before.
So basically, if I'm given like a AR grammar type thing that I have to cover, so AR verbs in Spanish, for example, and you know, there's a little like vocab list and there's like a theme, but in general, it's not very meaningful. So I would do my best to try to use what I was given and change it to be put in a very meaningful, realistic situation that I could put my students in, and they would have to use and speak and interact and actually use the language instead of just kind of learning about it adjacently. As if language is like on the peripheral of social interactions, yeah, instead of like the forefront. And then I realized that there are lots of pitfalls, not only just in education, but being a teacher. It is an extremely stressful job. That's also why like the pivot to CEO, sorry, I'm like bouncing around a little bit, but the pivot to CEO or just the pivot to another industry and having to pitch all the time and talk to investors and enter these pitch competitions was not daunting at all, because everything, it will always be scarier to be in front of like a group of 20 middle school students that like don't want to be there.
Really?
I already like hate you. And then also you're running the entire thing. Like the way that this paradigm is set up right now is that the teachers are, you can get away with it. You can kind of move around it as much as possible and try to get like these like not teacher oriented classes, but in the end still the teacher is the expert in a class, which is impossible when you have something, you know, it really works for any concept, but a concept as complex as language that has all these different dialects and all these different ways of speaking and all these different variations, one person cannot possibly be an expert on that. So that was a huge pitfall, but so I moved out here to New Mexico to do a master's in Hispanic linguistics because I didn't want to be in that position anymore as a teacher, because I found that I was mostly kind of in a babysitting role instead of focusing on pedagogy and the actual transfer of content, which just comes with the game. Like, you just have to do it. You have to be a very, very good classroom, have really, really good classroom management skills. And I just wanted to, and I was doing that, and that was during the pandemic. So I was teaching on Zoom. We were instructors in a class, and students like wouldn't show up. Like, a lot of them just, like, I'd have like 5 kids in my Zoom room. And I can only have an impact on and actually work with those that show up. And the ones that didn't show up, when they finally, like, if I emailed them and said, "Hey, where were you?" they would tell me, and they would admit it. They're like, "I was just playing video games at home."
Like, at least they were being honest.
I mean, there was no reason, like, to lie, really. Like, I wasn't gonna, there's nothing I could really do. Like, you just don't show up. It's fine. Yeah. Yeah, it's up to you. And it was like a mandatory class. So I kind of, I'd already had in my mind this idea, like, going through all of these pitfalls in education and what I was going through and everything that I was trying to do to make it better, trying to make these, like, really fun lessons. I would make these, like, murder mysteries about reggaetoneros, like, Bad Bunny died and you had to, like, figure out who did it.
That's so cool, by the way.
and then I did, like, a little zombie apocalypse, like, series of lessons too, but I still had to cover these grammar things, and it was very forced. And so I found it harder and harder to make these cool things when I was given these very grammatical things to cover. These like conjugations and these like vocab lists that had, like, we had like an art vocab list that had the opera in it. And I was like, why? Who goes?
Nobody goes to opera.
I need like streaming. I need like Netflix account. I need like, how do I update my subscription? Like, all in Spanish.
Yeah.
Those are more useful. Those are like actual interactions. Well, interactions that you'd have with it. So I left the master's program before finishing because I just became really obsessed with this idea once I got it kind of down in my head, at least. And then I just started doing it. That was the transition, was... In my head, I was like, this just needs to happen. And I haven't met anybody else that like taught the way that I teach. And so, you know, I don't know anybody who could make this like transition from task-based learning to what we're, it is a thing, but it's not implemented very often. It's very rare. It's called narrative-based learning. Task-based learning, like I said before, is learning through the achievement or the completion of tasks. So at the end of this class, you're going to solve Bad Bunny's murder. And then now you have to do a bunch of stuff before then. It's different little 15-minute activities, blah, blah, blah. Narrative-based learning, that is an isolated task for like one lesson. Narrative-based learning is having those tasks each day, for example, or for each lesson, but they all string together into one coherent story. So that's what Faena is, except like I have this phrase. I always say like on steroids. I don't know if this is like a Baltimore thing or something, but I always say like, oh my God, like, get that, but like on steroids, which just means that it's more.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't mean to like use that term, but that is in my lexicon for sure, using that phrase. But yeah, so Faena takes these tasks and then strings them together. So everything that you learn is situated into a story. So think of like experiencing the entire Harry Potter series, except you end up being fluent in Spanish at the end.
Oh, wow.
So each little tiny task makes sense according to whatever's happening socially. So you're not learning AR verbs. You're learning like, if my house is on fire, I have to ask for a bucket of water. I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to ask them if they need help with this or this.
Yeah.
So it's all very interaction based.
I love that because I have been trying to learn Spanish for years now. And my vocabulary is very limited to what I've been watching on Netflix, which consists of Narcos and El Chapo and all the, you know, cartel related language. So I don't think that's very useful.
Depends on where you are. But yeah.
I guess it depends on where you are, right?
I mean, if you really have to prep for something specific and that's going to be useful for you, then I would go for it.
It's like plato plomo, you know, that's like, I don't know why that's like the first thing on my mind.
It's iconic.
Yeah. But I love the fact that like you're so creative with it, and that's the, you know, foundation of Faena is that you were trying to teach Bad Bunny murder mystery to your Zoom class. Like, how fun is that? I really wish my Spanish teachers were anywhere close to that. I would have been fluent by now.
Yeah.
I think honestly it's such a cool Such a cool concept. English is my second language, and like the way that I learned was literally through video games and watching TV. So I know.
How old were you?
I think I was like seven or eight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the way that you learned is actually technically a first language acquisition model. So the point at which you're actually considered learning a second language is when you already have whatever first languages you got and you're around like 12 years old, 12, 13.
Okay.
So the way that you can learn at that age is just being exposed. You're basically like a sponge and you can soak it up.
Yeah.
But when you hit this certain point, you really need to, it's definitively a second language. The way that you're going to learn is differently. It doesn't mean that you can't reach this like native like fluency because you sound native, even though that's because you learned it when you were really young. So it's a bit of a different process. It makes it a lot more difficult. Yeah. Basically, the two best ways it eventually will be to learn a language is like it will always be as a kid. Mm. Will always be number one.
Yep.
No one can ever beat that.
Yeah.
The second would be Fayana.
And you were saying that it's actually much harder to be a teacher than a CEO. Walk me through that. Like, I know you said, you know, middle class, 20 middle class students they don't want to be there, but being a CEO is hard. So I'd love to hear a little bit more of the comparisons.
Maybe I haven't just hit the hard part yet. I'm sure it gets more difficult in being a CEO. But no, teaching was hard. Like I think that's one of the hardest jobs ever. Because you're given a syllabus and you have to comply and you have all these testing things that you have to comply with and you have to prep your kids for that. And then your job is on the line for things that you probably don't have control over. Like if you have students that are coming to your class that, you know, didn't have breakfast, that's not something that's in your control. And so they can't focus and, you know, they might be acting out, but all of those things aren't like, they're not your fault. They're not the kids' fault. They're no one's fault. It's just kind of what's in place today. Depending on what school you're at and what grade you're teaching and all of these things. There's basically, I think there's the biggest difference might be that being a teacher, you don't have control over those things. Mm-hmm. And so the job is just almost, I don't want to say impossible, but I'm sure many teachers feel that at least some days that it feels very impossible. Like an impossible, you're given an impossible task to have these kids like learn something and then they're not. Or they're not paying attention, or they're acting out, or you have all these fire drills during the day, or whatever it is. I'm not trying to blame fire drills for like America's teaching problem. Also, the other thing is that we don't have enough teachers. Like I was trying to get like letters of intent for my business, for Fayana to say like, hey, when we publish our first chapter, would you buy it at this rate? And I had a lot of my teachers' friends kind of look at it and be like, yeah, I'd be really interested in that. And just my personal network. And when I reached out to, I think, my high school Spanish teacher, they like offered me a job. They're like, hey, there's an opening. Like, I know that you speak Spanish. Like, can you come? And I was like, no, I'm doing this.
But no,
like,
I'm a CEO now. Yeah. No, I'm good. Well,
that's another kind of thing that I see, especially in ed tech, that people are constantly making tools for teachers that probably aren't there. There's just not enough. And so you're like, oh, I want to aid the teacher. And when you keep this paradigm as the teacher is still as like this main expert, this person still running the classroom. But, you know, there's many ways around this. So, you know, you could have a lot of like, you could double teacher salaries, like all of them, and then have like federal funding to do that or something like that. And I'm sure that would solve a lot of these problems, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I prefer to make sure that Fayana works both as a tool in addition to teachers and also, instead of, in case a school doesn't have a Spanish program.
Mm. And so talk to me about this paradigm shift, right? Like, is it your theory that teachers are going to get replaced or that the teachers aren't necessarily the experts?
I think that they can't be. I think this paradigm that we're in where you have, think of it like the lecture paradigm. We have one teacher in front of like 30 students, pupils, and they're there to listen to you talk. There's been efforts to switch this. It's called a flipped classroom. where, yeah, where you try to get the students to be active in the learning process instead of passive, which seems like very obvious, yeah. But it's, you're like, they should do stuff, right? Yeah. But I actually remember, I'm going to go off course here a little bit, but I remember when I started teaching and I was being taught to teach in the certification process. And I had like this PowerPoint, and I was going through all these vocab terms, and I had like a photo for each term, and like the photo would like come up on a transition in the slide, but it was me running the whole thing, and they would like repeat after me, and I would like ask a few questions, but it was mostly me. And I didn't realize this until my mentor teacher, she's like, what did they do in that whole process? Like, what intellectual work did the students do? And I was like, oh, I don't know, like repeated. And she's like, they didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything, yeah.
And so they didn't learn anything. Yeah. They just watched you perform. And so I had to take a step back and see like, the learning process doesn't happen with me like pushing things onto them. It happens with me designing like a world or a lesson plan and then having them enact it as much as possible without my interference. Because then the intellectual work is on them. So I think that's like part of the paradigm shift. And we do see that happening. Like teachers know, like I need to get them to do as much stuff as possible. Just active things instead of me lecturing. So the lectures are kind of old school, you know, see them in like the free like Harvard classes that you can see online, or the Harvard lectures, like you can see that happening. That's still that paradigm. And then basically that's that, but bled over into what teaching still looks like today, like in a secondary classroom, like middle school, high school classroom, and university classrooms as well. Especially, this is a problem for the acquisition of any content, learning anything. Like it cannot be passive because the process of actually doing something is in fact learning as well. And it's a feedback loop constantly. So the learning process isn't just happening when you are exposed to something, but it happens again and in a different way if you do it. So and especially with language, like you can get away with that with like math, or maybe you can just get, maybe it's just been happening for so long because it's easier. Like it's easier for a teacher just to organize that. My first thing when I started teaching was like, I'll just make this PowerPoint and then I do it because I know that I can do it. But that's not the point. They have to be able to do it, not me. I know that I can do it. I know I speak Spanish. I realized that as a teacher, like the only, while I was teaching, as much as I could get the students to do these like really weird activities and like get into these really weird situations that I've placed upon them and that I've designed, and I would like print out worksheets and I'd put them around the room, or I'd go to like a different classroom and it'd be a scavenger hunt and it would get them up and moving. But there's still a limit to that happening. One, because I'm designing the whole thing and I'm not an expert. Like I speak Spanish and I have certain knowledge sets, about like Colombian Spanish or like Southern Spain Spanish or Northern Spain Spanish or whatever. But they're the only voices that they're hearing speak Spanish in the classroom is mine, and I'm not a native speaker. Not that that matters wholly, but or too much. But then also maybe like some videos that I have of some speaker. Maybe you hear Bad Bunny talking, and like before he died, what was he doing? but that's not enough because there's so many Spanish speakers. You know that this is a whole another world. This is a whole culture and multiple culture and facets of that culture and dialects and this, the amount of variation that can be put into or covered by a single classroom in one semester, in one year, it doesn't even touch how much there is out there. And we need to prepare you for any of these countries that you go to or any of these areas, even in the US, if there's like a Spanish-speaking person like working in a restaurant, you want to talk to them. That's also they have their own indicators, they have their own social hierarchies, they have their own dialects, they have their own ways of speaking. And indexing meaning by how they speak. And so part of that paradigm shift is like removing the teacher as this very prominent figure in the learning acquisition process, in the content. I think this happened a while ago. There was a hole in the wall experiment. I don't know when it was done. It might have been like early 2000s. And it was done in India, and they basically put a computer in a hole in a wall, and all these kids just started playing with it. And they didn't download anything. They just had like a computer there. And, oh, I think it had internet or something like that. And then the kids, like, they came, the people who put the computer there, it was just this, like, experiment. They came back and they looked at what they were doing, and the kids were like, oh, we need this program, we need this program on this, and this needs to be fixed because I can't. And they had never seen, like, a computer before or something like that. And it just, and then that kind of, I don't know if that, like, propelled this, like, flipped classroom, we'll call it, like, a slight paradigm shift, or this, like, step up. But they, and then they also, the next experiment after that, when they basically proved that they can teach themselves. If you have all the resources there, kids will teach themselves, or anybody will teach themselves. And then also they'll teach each other. So the biggest thing that they saw was like the ones that already knew how to do something, they would teach like a younger one or someone that just, another kid that just came in, how to do something because they were trying to play a game or whatever it was. And so these mechanisms are already in place socially for people to learn. And then this other thing that we're doing, which is like one person in the front, it's kind of the weird thing. If you think of all the ways that you learn things every single day, that's actually quite weird. And man, I'm just like ranting at this point, but sorry, the secondary experiment after that was I think it was called like the grandma experiment or something like that. And they put students in a room with a bunch of computers, and then the kids could Zoom or Skype or video chat with, grandmas.
Or, is it their grandmas people. Or just random grandmas?
No, it's just a bunch of grandmas.
Okay.
And they, probably some grandpas too.
Yeah, let's not discriminate the grandpas.
I know. You're right. No, I'm sure they were there too. But basically they found that these kids, again, would teach themselves, but the learning process was facilitated when you had these people encourage you to do it. And that was it. Like they weren't, this grandma, this person wasn't an expert in whatever they were learning. They were just like, oh, you're doing great. Like, that's so much fun. Like, why don't you see if you could do this? Like, I'm curious about that. Like, how did you do that? That's amazing. And then they would teach you and they'd tell you. And so I think these processes are already there. We're just not capitalizing all on them as much. And so I think we really need more of this like flipped classroom experience. And flipped classroom experience, and Payana can offer that to we can go to quite far with that, because if there is an instructor in the room, they can basically facilitate like, oh my gosh, what did you find? Like, that's so cool. And that's all people really, really need, is they really need someone that'll just be like, yeah, like, keep going, like, you're doing great. And then Payana will take care of the rest.
Yeah, I believe that too, because it's like, we know what we want to learn. I think for the most part, people know what they want to learn. And it's just about being encouraged and having that validation on that journey to learning. And just to summarize what you were saying, it sounds like you're saying the paradigm shift is taking the teacher from being the main character of this learning process to then changing them to be almost like a sideline cheerleader to facilitate the learning and allowing the students to be the main character.
Yes, definitely. And also a god. I have a god.
Okay.
This is something that I thought of like a lot. Once I learned that, when I failed like my first lesson when I was teaching, and it was all about me basically performing, and then they were supposed to learn by watching me and like repeating some words. And I was thinking, oh, I know, I can't be in the front. I have to be like a creator.
Oh,
I have to be so far in the background. Yeah. And I have to get students to think that they found these things on their own. But I'll make the entire world for them to find everything in.
Mm. I really love that. I love that because, you know, it's not even about teaching, but I think it's about social interaction in general, right? It's like, you don't want to hear the other person constantly talk about themselves. That's not really interesting. The best conversations, when you actually look at it from a psychological perspective, are conversations where the other person asks about you and they give you this space for you to like talk and discover a little bit more about who you are. And that's what you're doing with teaching too. You're saying, be in the background, be the person who's mm-hmm. asking questions and listening rather than being the talker and the performer.
Right. Yeah. And many teachers do this, you know, working within this paradigm. And I tried it and it's hard. Like, and you hit a ceiling with what you're actually able to pull off. Yeah. But yeah. like, yeah, the paradigm shift is having teachers be like gods.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to take us back to your journey, because you made it sound so easy, like, oh, like we had COVID, and then, you know, I went from teaching to then starting Faena. Okay, how? Like, what? So did you have a team of developers that you knew, or like, how did you recruit your team and then became a tech founder?
So it was a year before I left the master's, and I had been thinking about this and I had the idea in my head. And then there was this NSF iCorps grant program, and they would give you $3,000 for a business idea. And I had this idea and I just started doing it. And I had a friend at the time who wasn't a developer, but he had fiddled around with this like pixelated RPG maker online that's for free, where you could make like a pretty easy MVP. I just didn't like the art style. Oh, forever. Yeah, that'll haunt me later. But yeah, the 3K basically validated that. We got into that program. And then right after that, there was a Comcast pitch competition and we got second place, and it was like my first like pitch deck that I'd made. I did it in like a week, and I was still like teaching and doing all these things. And I guess just being an artist, I just knew how to make things like not look horrible. So like, you know, basic things of like, don't do 12 point font, like make it bigger. Like, yeah, don't have too many things on the screen. And then we got second place. So that was 5K.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then there were other little tiny things. And basically, it was a lot of like, there was enough validation for me to be like, oh, this is a really good idea. Like, it was a really good idea in my head. And then other people are like, oh, this is also a really good idea. So it was validation from the people around me. And then the decision to leave the master's and not forego a salary for God knows how long. That was a decision that my husband and I kind of talked over, and, you know, we talked financials and made sure that it wouldn't be too much of a burden on him. So he's basically, carrying the team, so to speak, at the moment, financially. And so I think the reason why I do talk about how it was such an easy decision was because I did have support from the people around me. There were very few people telling me like I shouldn't do this. And that always facilitates something happening.
Yeah.
It wasn't like everyone around me was saying no, and then I was like, oh, but I have to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone was telling me yes, and I was also telling myself yes. And then the biggest person, the last person was my husband, and he was like, I think you should go for it. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. I also told him it would be like 6 months and then I get $1 million. And that has not happened, and I was very naive, and I did not know what I was doing, and I'm sure that I'll stay the same in like 6 months.
But it's in the future now. Plan. It's yeah. There.
It's there, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it was, you know, I think the reason why it was so easy, probably at its core, is that my husband can support me while I do this. Mm. Like, that's the bottom line.
So it sounds like the people around you have been what you called like the creators for you to jump to this new learning experience that's, you know, the world of tech.
Yeah, well, it's not, I don't know, I wouldn't like, there's so many different worlds of tech. And I actually feel that ed tech is a bit adjacent anyway, because it has to, if your customers and your market segments that you're selling to are educational systems and teachers, they go by a very specific, very time-constrained sales cycle. Mm-hmm. You have summers off. You have they are not going to answer during the holidays.
Yeah.
They're not going to answer during their own spring break. So right now we're in like a lull period of being able to sell the demo to teachers because everyone has different spring breaks.
Yeah.
And they're all happening like mid February to like end of March.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
So it's a bit harder to reach people, and investors don't like that kind of constraint in that process. Mm. So I think EdTech kind of gets pushed. Also, I think a bunch of investors, I forget what years it was where there was a big, they lost a lot of money in EdTech. Mm. So there's a bit of a kind of a risk aversion to EdTech companies.
Gotcha. So Walk us through that purchasing journey for EdTech, right? Because it's not necessarily the teachers that are purchasing the product, right? Or Faena. It's they might give you the letter of intent, but the budget comes from another source. Or maybe I'm just getting this. Yeah. I mean, this educated guess.
No, that's also a problem with EdTech. That's why it's pushed, I think, not like center of I don't know, startup tech development. So there's a bunch of different ways to do this, and we've actually been experimenting with this and exploring the market. You can sell directly to teachers, but it has to be like $10 to $20 for each single item. Because so there's a lot
that's
of
like
teacher market. I know, yeah, I know. So there's a lot of teacher marketplaces online. One, maybe the biggest one, is Teachers Pay Teachers. It's something. And anytime when I was like making a lesson and I didn't have money, so I would definitely not pay. But I would Google like speaking lessons, Spanish, AR verbs. I'm sorry, obsessed with AR verbs, or like subjunctive. And then you'd look it up, and then some teachers on Teachers Pay Teachers would have created some of these lesson plans and activities, and you can buy them for cheap, like $2, $5, $10, depending on how much that activity, how much time it's supposed to cover. Teachers are looking to fill that time. You know, they have like an hour and a half, or they have an hour and 15 or 45 minute classrooms. They're trying to fill that. So one route is actually to go directly to teachers. This is the way that a product can become sticky in the EdTech marketplace. So this like stickiness of like, oh, well, one person's using it and it provided so much value for them that they'll tell other people, and people keep coming back, and it's like this recurring kind of cycle. You can do that with teachers. It just has to be little bite-sized things. So with Faena, we are going to release in chapters and episodes. So there'll be around 10 little 15 to 30 minute episodes per chapter. And if you buy the chapter, you would save money on all the, if you bought all the individual episodes. But we have to price the episodes near to those price points. Then the other buyers in the ed tech space would be like a department chair. They would have some funds. They have purchasing power. What we were able to do with the school, the three schools that have Faena demo playing now, that they paid for. One was like a PTSA. They had like some extra funds in PTSA. PTSA is a parent teacher student association. So it's like parents being able to be involved in decisions that the school's going to make, and then it sometimes involves funds. And then the teachers can also buy themselves, but they would need to get confirmation, you know, buy these bigger chapters. And the demo was like huge. It's like an hour and a half. Teachers playing it, or students playing it, it takes like three lessons sometimes, like entire class periods. So it's pretty hefty. And we had to price it like that because we're like, well, the value of this is like pretty big. You don't have to plan three lessons. No. Teachers could buy that directly from me, but they had to get confirmation that they would get reimbursed from their department. The other one is like a principal can buy it for their entire school. Or, which is the big, big, big contracts, is you get it for, you go get superintendents, which are these you know, the directors of these entire school systems.
Yeah, so as a CEO, like, where is your focus? Because, you know, who do you sell to? Do you sell to the teachers and the smaller and then go by volume? Or do you go to the superintendent and have the long sales cycle, but, you know, you're getting maybe one or two a year or a quarter?
Yeah. So we essentially want to build up. We want to start with to get that stickiness. And it's also a quicker sales cycle. And because investors are looking for us to perform in shorter amounts of time, and also we're going to run out of money in a short amount of time. So we really have to do things quickly. And also speed is just the name of the game. And then once you have enough of these people, I don't say like on the lower level, but enough teachers, then you can go up the hierarchy. And then you have all these teachers that basically said, hey, I bought this. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. You should buy like four chapters of this for the entire unit or something like that. So we're going to attack teachers first, individuals, try to get that stickiness. We're also going to sell the game, the first chapter of the game, which will be out in like June. On Steam and Epic as just like a regular game.
Oh, okay.
We still need to do some market testing. Those episodes, those like 15 to 30 minutes, unfortunately, the way the demo is designed, we can't really cut it into those chunks, but we're designing the full game to be cut into chunks. Because we just learned how, like, we need to make it smaller so that we can bring the price down and just make it more achievable for teachers that don't have a bunch of money.
Gotcha. And what's the feedback been like from the actual learners? Like, are they getting to a fluency level from playing Vienna?
No, and we didn't expect that. So the game is an hour and a half. So it's like, it's not the equivalent of you reading a book for an hour and a half, but think if you read a book for an hour and a half, you wouldn't really get very far.
Yeah.
However, the way that we're doing it, we're teaching you these phrases. And I did have a feedback meeting with someone, and they were like, we teach you how to say, like, can you give me this item? Uh-huh. So it's me das unos tomates or me das una jarra de agua. Like, can you give me something? Like, blank. And they were like, ah, and there was that one part, and they didn't understand what I was saying. And it was, I was asking for the tomates. And they said tomates. I was like, ah, yeah, tomates. Like, good job. And then they're like, me das. I said, like, me das. And they remember me das. And it was like a week later. So that was really fun just to watch. I have one of the teachers that is super, super into it. And they actually made like a pretest and a post-test for their students, just because they're into it, and they're like big fans, and they really like what we're doing, and they're looking to have it purchased more by their students by their department.
That's awesome.
Just the demo, but the biggest feedback, at least on this, when in by the schools, and the teachers and the students, is that so this is feedback from two classes so far. They told me that each of these classes, these are different schools, different classes, different students. They are both very quiet. They're very, very quiet classes. They don't speak a lot. And this
introvert.
Is very common.
Class of introverts.
Yeah, they're introverts. Or, you know, sometimes it's just like a class culture. Like, this is just my quiet class. And they just don't say anything. And it's so hard to get them to speak. And that happens a lot. And then you have this other really, like, boisterous class. And they're super loud. And they, like, annoy you in yeah. many different other ways. So the spectrum's all over the place. But these two classes, I was told, were silent. Like, they didn't say anything. They're very hard to get to speak. And I was there for one of them because one of them is in Albuquerque. And I watched this entire class talk for like 45 minutes. Or was it
the
an
quiet
hour,
class
an hour 15,
talked.
I think. Yes, all the time.
Wow.
Like, for the entire time. Because you can't not talk.
Yeah.
You won't advance in the game. So people are like recording themselves talking, and they're like yelling at it. Da, 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 da. They're like getting their friend to come over there, and they're all talking. It's loud and it's vibrant, and you can see it and you can feel that happening. There's energy in the room, and they're talking Spanish. They're speaking Spanish. And then I think there was another.
What was that feeling like? You know, it's like this is your creation, and you're seeing it being used in real life, and you're seeing the reaction of people actually interacting with it. What was that feeling like for you?
It's pretty confirming. Like it's some, I have a lot of things in my head, and then it's nice to see them outside of my head, working and functioning. But I think more of what you're thinking about in that moment is like all the, like the ones that aren't, that are having a problem with like the voice recognition system, things that we need to fix. Think like how long will it take us to fix that, roll out the next version, have like new students play.
Yeah.
So you're more like on,
but
it is fun, and it's, like they're laughing and it's nice to feel the teachers, like to have them like look up from their screens and like look, and they're like, oh, like they're so loud.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they can talk. Like they actually can talk.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get them to do that.
Yeah. I was going to say it's such an entrepreneurial way of thinking where it's like, you're not looking at like all the positive reaction. You're like spotting the ones that are having issues. Like, how can I fix that? It's very entrepreneurial. We're all problem solvers.
You have to do it. Yeah. I've noticed that it's very hard to stay and like bask in the wins that we face. Like recently we just got a 10K grant. Actually, the check should be like coming today.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Go check outside.
Yeah.
You can like scan it. But that was actually news that we found out on my birthday in early January. So
yeah.
Super fun. But it's only coming now, which is a pretty big turnaround time. You know, I'd say like with investors, it's, you know, like it's like a couple weeks to get them to sign something, and then like next few days they'll send wire the money over, and so that's super nerve-wracking to have this thing kind of, it's not up in the air, you know, it was solidified, like they're not gonna back out, like I won this competition,
yeah,
but you never know. And so So it's hard to stay and like, oh, I won something. I'm doing a good job. I need to keep going.
Yeah.
And then you just face with this other thing that's a problematic. You have to fix that instead of like being like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. But
yeah.
Then recently I was able to make it public that we won this grant. It's like Dove Chocolate's Instagram's competition. They're like funding entrepreneurial women because we're like 65% less likely to be funded. Something like that, just because we're female.
Yeah.
And then these people are like, oh, congrats. And they're like, you should be so proud of yourself. And I was like, I don't know. I sent in a 30-second video. there are harder things in life. And that was,
you're coasting. Honestly, from the start of the interview, you're like, oh yeah, it's so much easier to be a CEO than a teacher. And you're like, oh yeah, we just got a check. No big deal. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to do more work. And I don't know. It sounds like you're coasting, and it's so awesome to hear that, because you just hear like culturally, everyone's like, if you're a CEO, you got to hustle hard. You got to do this. You got to grind, blah, blah, blah. But it like, I don't know. You make it sound so easy and like a fun journey.
It is. I think it's the most fun thing I've ever done. And it's also really like, I wouldn't do this if it wasn't fun. I'm too much of like a thrill seeker to have a bad time. teaching was was super anxious, and you have these kids, and like if you say the wrong thing, I remember this kid, a student of mine, like burped, and I don't know why, but I was like, that's so rude, like you shouldn't have done that. And then the guy got really quiet, and he like wouldn't talk to me, and he was a very productive kind of class clown type, which is it was very useful in the particular class that he was in, because he was energetic and the rest weren't. And so he would kind of lift everyone up, and a really, really great student, and, you know, did not mean to be rude at all. But my initial reaction was like, that was so rude. Like, you shouldn't have done that. Like, why did you do that? But then it was kind of dumb. I was just burping. And like, to him, doing a burp is not like rude at all. And like the way that I grew up, like my Midwestern mom would be like mad at me and so keep it in order. My British dad, like that's like not something you do. And so there are these things you have to worry about that are just, you know, it has a lot to do with human relations and people looking up to you and you not wanting to say the wrong thing. And it's just a lot. It's a lot. And I think it's just different being in a tech adjacent industry, or being in a tech and having a startup, you have to worry about different things, but there's definitely a lot of games you have to play, like social games and weird social dynamics.
Social games, I was gonna say. Oh yeah.
So weird. I've had interaction where I'm just like, why did that happen? Like, does it need to happen? Like, none of that needed to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to hide.
Is there like a really memorable story you can share of like where you felt like, oh, like why did this happen? And this is such a game.
Oh, it's a bunch, but I can't share them. No, okay. Unfortunately. No, but no, I think I do often think about like me just being able to keep going with this. And I think the biggest stressful aspect of this is that I do have people under me that need me to bring in money. Otherwise they can't provide for themselves because they chose to take a leap of faith with me, you know, my co-founders. And so I need to provide for them. I need to make sure that they can put food on their table. I need to make sure all of those things happen. And that's very stressful. And that's a new kind of stress that I didn't have with being a teacher.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, no, I think teaching was hard as hell.
Yeah. I mean, you have people who are, as you said, they're relying on you to bring in the check, to continuously share your vision and guide them to this future state of what language learning is going to be.
You need money in the door because you have to pay people. And so that's kind of always a priority. And then the idea is to get as much money in the door as possible so that you can worry about money, or you can not worry about money for as long as possible.
How you can balance your vision, so how you're balancing vision with running the business, managing the team, and securing funding.
Procrastinate the vision. I have so many things that this can be, and it will be if I have the money to do it. And
that's a hard thing to do, to procrastinate the vision. Because as a founder, as an entrepreneur, like that's all you want to do.
I know. Yeah. And you can't, it's not going to happen right away. So it's kind of like the little marshmallow experiment, except, you know, there's
marshmallow, like where you stuff marshmallows.
No, not that one. That's a different one. The marshmallow experiment where you like leave a kid with a marshmallow and you tell them not to eat it.
Oh my God.
They'll get two.
You know what's crazy? What? Yeah, I know that experiment. It's like, do you want one now or two later? Mm-hmm. I kid you not. I actually did not know about this experiment until last night.
Really?
And I was reading, this book called Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. And I'm literally on the chapter about delayed gratification and how there's a timing for everything that, like, you know, would you rather, and he was using the marshmallow example, would you rather want, he explained the marshmallow experiment and said, would you rather want one vacation now or two vacations, you know, 5 years from now? And when you're in your 20s, you know, you can have that delay. You can have, you know, you can wait 5 years. But if you're 80 years old, you're probably going to want to take that vacation while you still have your health.
Yes.
So, yeah, I didn't know about this experiment. So it's such a crazy coincidence.
That's funny.
And I didn't mean to digress us. So yes, take us back to how you balance.
No, it is the delayed gratification. So it's like, you have to work really hard to get as much, like, it'd be like, chipping off some of the marshmallow because you have to sell something. You have to make something and prove something. So I've ripped off part of it. I can't eat it, but I have to like put it somewhere else. And then that marshmallow gets like put into another room where I can see it. And it's like doubled into two marshmallows. And then I have to chip off another big bit. And then it gets put into a farther room and it doubles in size. I think it's difficult, but I always kind of remember everyone who has been my mentor, been like a founder mentor to me, a fellow founder of mine, a fellow founder friends of mine, or just mentors that are helping out and kind of know a bit more, or have done this before, something like that. They have always told me, like, you will not like the first thing that you put out. You won't like it. You shouldn't like it because you just needed to get something out. And it's much more important just to have gotten something done than. So I have that in mind.
Done is better than perfect.
Yeah, but then you do have to balance it with, like, no, this has my name on it. Like, I have to make it really good. Like,
especially as an artist, you want everything to be perfect.
I know. Yeah, it's tough. I don't know if I've found that balance yet. I think I should find it soon. I think it would feel great to find it soon. We've definitely had an issue with the demo, which is like. I think I oscillate between being okay with like getting something out, like get it done. And then we have updated versions of the demo and it's done. And we'll tell people like, listen, there's the new updates. You can play it. It's a bit better of an experience. Blah, blah. And then going back and being like, oh, there's like, there's this typo in this one scene and we need to fix it. And then I'll be like, no, it's just a typo. It doesn't matter. But then I'll find like 15 typos and I'll be like, no, let's fix all of them. And then we'll put out a new version. So I think that balance is still being struck. My team is like, they're definitely annoyed with like how much I oscillate between being like, screw it, don't worry about it. And then being like, nope, we need to make this really, really good, fix it.
That is an internal struggle for sure. Like me personally, I have been like a perfectionist all my life and I am now purposely trying to just not care about the little details as much because I'm like, you know what, speed is more important than like perfection. So if I see a spelling error in my text messages or email and I see it, I still hit send because I'm like, you know, I have to get over that perfectionist mindset.
Nice.
But it's an internal struggle.
It is. And then the next time you make a mistake, I mean, I think you'll eventually get to the point where it's not causing you so much, you know, internal stress. But then you also have to you have to think about balance all of this with, you know, it's just a mistake, but it has my name on it. It is the company's mistake now too. It has like other two people, another has my team's name on it as well. This is all, this does need to be as good as possible. And then when people see it and they see, you know, different people can think different things about a typo, for example, or any type of small, what you consider a small error. Other people would be like, this is unprofessional or something like that. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest problems is that there are many, many different audiences in the startup space and that tech space and like tech space. And they all think that the way that they think is correct. And it's really hard to tell them that they're not, or that there's many different ways to be a successful company, and there's many different ways to be a, you know, a founder, and different ways to have a successful product. But yeah, that balance.
So what does success then look like for you? Like, if you can, have your full vision of Faena 5 years from now, like, what is that success?
Oh, I want it to be, I mean, if it's a household name, like to do my Faena. So do you know what Faena means?
Floral?
Faena? No.
No. I was thinking like fauna and floral. Okay, never mind.
No, that actually, it's adjacent to the world. But no, that's not, there's a couple different definitions of Faena in the Spanish speaking world, depending on who you ask and where they're from. The way that I learned it, a faena was work that you do towards the collective good. And this was in I learned it in a culture, politics, and language in the Andes mountains in South America. And so a faena is like work that you do towards the collective good of collective well-being of a community. And so I want faena to be kind of this household name where it's work, but it's a faena. It's like, it's good work. It feels good. Mm. You've bettered the world by doing this, which is being multilingual. I want faena to be, I would love faena to have the same kind of cultural phenomenon, or to have the faena world to be like parallel to the Marvel universe, parallel to like Last of Us, because we want the story itself to sell, and then you end up playing and you're like, oh, I'm actually learning Spanish. Like, no way, that's so cool. So we want those two things to happen at the same time, so that, you know, when teachers will be buying it, but also their students are being like, can be like, I just found this game, I played it, and I actually learned Spanish, and they tell their teachers that, and then the teachers tell their department chairs that, and then suddenly we're in a bunch of schools. So yeah, I want Faena to be, I also like, what I want Faena to do, apart from just making people actually fluent in what they're trying to learn, is for them to understand that their confidence in speaking has not been built up at all until now. So you were always, you know, made to feel like, or not made to feel, but you end up being embarrassed when you started speaking. We don't want you to feel that way. And you don't have to feel that way. That's not like a given in our world. Like, you can just feel good just by speaking. And it'll be alone in your room or in your couch, in your house or whatever, or like in a little cubicle in the gym when everyone's playing in their classroom or something like that. But I want people to know that everybody can speak Spanish. You just have to play the game and speak, and that's it.
Again, you make everything sound so like simple and easy, and I really admire that. You want people to know a second language and for them to build confidence while they're in this learning process. And just going back to tying back to our earlier conversation and allowing that teacher figure to be in the background and be the cheerleader as opposed to being the main character. So and helping to build the students' confidence.
Yeah,
I love that.
I think I like what you said about characters before, and you said it again, because it's a metaphor, but also quite literally they're the main character.
exactly.
So that was funny.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to share with our audience? Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to share?
We are doing right now an Indiegogo campaign, a crowdfunding campaign, I've mentioned it a couple times in this interview or this podcast, but, we are trying to build the first full hour of the Faena game. So we have our demo. You can play that. You can pay for it right now and buy it. But what we really want to do is use what we've learned from the demo testing and from have all these students play and all these individuals play it. We want to make this full version of the game. So learning what we've learned, we want to keep going. And so we need around 20,000 to fund the team for 4 months. We actually need a bit more, but we can have everyone just suffer a little bit and that's fine. So 20K will be okay. It is like the bare minimum. because we burn about $5,000 a month. And this is just paying, it's not even me. I'm not seeing any of this money. Or I see it for like a second and it just sends it off to someone else. So this just goes to the other co-founders, Matt and Yaz, for them to continue building this with me for 4 months. And then we'll release that full hour long chapter. But we have like almost like $3,000 of the $20,000 done, but we need everybody to chip in.
Oh, that's awesome.
You can do like even like $1 you can do. But we have a bunch of different perks ranging from $5 to $500. The $500 one is actually really, really fun and really cool. There are these creatures in the game called pachas, and they're like animal-like creatures. They're very mysterious. They're very cute. They're very fluffy. We have a bunch of actually AI concept art that we made, and we now have models of some of that. So the pachas are ready to go, and you can build your own, or you can send us photos of your pet, and then we'll make them into a pacha. Like for the game,
cool.
And then when you do buy the game and play the game, you'll be able to use that pacha, and it follows you around, and you get to interact with it and like teach it stuff. And very cool.
That is so cool.
So yeah, pushing anything towards that Indiegogo campaign would be amazing.
Okay, awesome. So everyone should go to your Indiegogo campaign because you are raising money to have the full version of your demo out of your game out.
Yeah, and if they if they can't pitch in their own money, that's okay. I am also poor. You can just share it.
All right. Yes. We'll make sure that we're sharing this within the Wander community as well. Isabel, if anyone wants to reach out to you directly, what's the best way that they can find you?
Just to save my email not being too overrun, I would find me on LinkedIn and message me and do like a little note as to why you want to chat with me. Or DM us on Instagram. Also, that works.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the interview. I had so much fun with you here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to Visionaries by Wander, where we explore the stories of inspiring individuals who have pursued their dreams and made a positive impact in the world. We hope you have enjoyed listening to our latest episode, and we would like to invite you to check out our other episodes for more thought-provoking discussions and inspiring stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media at Wander Studio and listen to a new episode every week.